This week, we explore the idea of the fourth part of a circle. Much is talked about in the ritual about this, but it's never really explained in depth. This week, we'll talk about it and explore the astrological ideas it might contain in the first part of this two-part series. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back to the show. This is episode number 463. This episode is being recorded before MasonicCon Chicago and airing after it closes. So, as I said in my last episode, I'm sure I was going to say that everything went great. I'm sure everything went great! But, switching gears, I want to go ahead and thank all of our supporters, the fellows, the contributors, and the producers of the Whence Came You podcast. If you want to learn more about how you can help this show out week after week, month after month, year after year, to keep bringing all this Masonic education out there for everybody, available forever, all episodes. There's no archive that you have to pay extra money for, to have a community of people assist with the cost of the program. In order to make that happen, go to WCYpodcast.com, click on Support the Show, and check out how you can assist. I've got a lot to do to get ready for MasonicCon Chicago, and that means we don't have time to tarry around. So let's get into the education right now. So much has been said about various parts of our ritual and lectures. There are concepts that we don't always understand exactly what they are due to the nature of how they were understood in the time in which the ritual was written. One of those seems to be the idea of the fourth part of a circle. When we say the angle of 90 degrees, or the fourth part of a circle, what exactly is that? Well, mathematically, it can be described a few different ways. And I've looked at quite a few different papers over the years that have attempted to explain this. One of the better papers, however, comes from the Dormer Masonic Study Circle, from their Transactions, number 94. And this is by Worshipful Brother J.D. Blakely, MSC, FRIC, Provincial Area Grand Deputy something. I don't know what the C stands for. Essex, Past Master Lodge, number 5184. So this is coming out of the UGLE. But let's see what he has to say. The fourth part of a circle. Quote, below the highest sphere, four regents sit, who rule our world. The Light of Asia, Sir Edwin Arnold. Also, out of the midst thereof came the likeness of four living creatures. As for the likenesses of their faces, they four had the face of a man and the face of a lion on the right side, and they four had the face of an ox on the left side. They four also had the face of an eagle. Ezekiel 1:5-10. And the first beast was like a lion, and the second beast like a calf, and the third beast had a face as a man, and the fourth beast was like a flying eagle. Revelation 6:4-5. After that, I asked the angel of peace who went with me, who showed me everything that is hidden. Who are these four presences which I have seen and whose words I have heard and written down? And he said to me, the first is Michael, the merciful and long-suffering, and the second, who is set over the diseases and all the wounds of children of men, is Raphael, and the third, who is set over the powers, is Gabriel, and the fourth, who is set over the repentance unto hope of those who inherit eternal life, is named Fanel, the Book of Enoch, 10:1-8-9. Let prudence direct you, temperance chasten you, and fortitude support you, and justice be the guide in all of your actions. Charge of the first degree. And thou shalt make a veil of blue and purple and scarlet and fine twined linen, and thou shalt hang it upon four pillars of acacia overlaid with gold, and the veil shall divide unto you between the holy place and the most holy. Exodus 26:31-33. Come unto me, O thou of the four winds, almighty one, who breathest spirit into men to give them life, whose name is hidden and beyond the power of men to speak. Thrice greatest Hermes, G.R.S. Meade. What is a square? an angle of 90 degrees, or the fourth part of a circle, the ritual. Thus ends the beginning, a set of quotes. 4. From very ancient times, it has been a custom of men to refer all created matter to what they call the four elements, or the mystical elements of earth, water, air, and fire. We have seen in our study of the zodiac that the 12 signs can be divided into four triangles, which, respectively, have their fixed signs in Taurus, Aquarius, Scorpio, and Leo. And we refer these signs to the leading standards of the four divisions of the army of Israel, to the ox, the man, the eagle, and the lion. Even in our craft rituals, we follow the progression, although by implication we refer to the sand or earth of the sea or water, to the ravenous birds of the air and devouring beasts of the field, earth, and to the quote-unquote BB, to ashes or fire, face of earth and water, and four cardinal winds, air of heaven, end quote. Thus, the progression is from the dense earth, through elements which progressively become less dense, water and air, until we reach the state which results in the transmutation of matter. What so many people speak of as being the destruction of matter, although we now know that this conception is incorrect. Matter, on burning, is transmuted with the release of energy. In mystical teachings, we have many examples of the number 4. It is called the number of completion and manifestation of light. In the 4th verse of the 1st chapter of the book of Genesis, we read that God divided the light from the darkness. Pythagoras called the tetrad the root of all things, the fountain of nature, and the most perfect number. God was expressed as the tetrad because the decad, the 10, was the sum of the first 4 numbers. It is the center of the series 1 through 7, and, as the tetrahedron, it forms the first geometrical solid. The faces of the perfect ashlar are perfect squares, and the form of our lodges is said to be that of an oblong square. It is interesting to note that the reference in the explanation of the first tracing board to the form of the lodge as a parallelepipedon assumes that each lodge is in the form of a solid, bounded by 6 parallel faces each, presumably in the form of a rectangle, although this is not made clear in the definition. In Hebrew, the 4th letter, Daleth, has the meaning of a door, and it seems that this is in good accord with the object of our lodge meetings, which surely are the door by which we are made aware of higher things. We speak of 5 steps, as though ascending, and we speak of raising, or again, we refer to the rising of that bright morning star which brings peace and salvation to the faithful and obedient of the human race. I want to suggest to you that the star is not the one that we see in the sky. It is the star of our inner consciousness, whose unfoldment brings that peace which the world cannot give. It is the symbol of increasing awareness, which allows us to assess the things of this world at their proper value. The Hebrews revered the one God under the sacred tetragrammaton, the great 4-lettered name which only the high priest was permitted to pronounce, the sacred name which has been handed down to us in the form of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. On our second tracing board, we often find this name in small letters above the entrance to the middle chamber, and we say that they are here depicted by the letter G, signifying God. It probably is not a coincidence that, as pointed out in the Book of Numbers by Isidore Kosminski, many of the ancient peoples wrote the name of God with 4 letters. We have Thoth, Tot, Thot, Allah, Sire, Orsi, Abdi, Esar, Deus, Thor, and Jove. Later we have Lord, Deu, King, Got. In the zodiac, we have the 4 triplicities and the cardinal, fixed, and mutable crosses. In the elemental sphere, we have the 4 elements, the 4 seasons, the 4 winds, and the 4 qualities, heat, moisture, cold, and dryness, the 2 pairs of opposites. In the lower sphere, we have the 4 elements of man, mind, spirit, soul, and body. and the four cardinal virtues, prudence, temperance, fortitude, and justice. In astrology, the square is evil, possibly because it is symbolic of the pressure of matter and the sign of earth. In alchemy, often is a square, again suggesting something which is contained by boundaries. You will, of course, remember that our aprons are square in shape, denoting material limitation. Still following the significance of the four, the Hebrew Kabbalah refers to the four worlds called respectively Asiya, the material world, Yetzirah, the formative world, Bria, the creative world, and Azilut, or Azilut, the archetypal world. In some ancient Chinese pictures, the symbolical figure of God is shown either seated on a cube or holding the mason square in his hand, and the Egyptian gods, when sitting in judgment, are always seated on a square. It is symbolic that the term square conduct should denote just and upright dealing. As Kipling wrote, quote unquote, "We met upon the level and parted upon the square." Continuing the simile, our ritual says, "There in a G, from the center 3 feet east and 3 feet west, 3 feet between north and south, and 5 feet or more perpendicular." In reference to the crucifixion of the spirit of each one of us on the cross of matter, to the compression and limitation which the spirit must undergo when it incarnates in a physical body. The G in which the body of our master is buried, or the grave, is the material body which is cruciform in shape, and well may our own spirits, our real selves, be struck with horror at the dreadful and afflicting sight of that divine spark buried under the rubble of our errors and transgressions, both against the divine and the natural laws of the universe, and well may they express their sympathy with the sufferings which each ego must experience in its slow climb of return to its native home. Can we not see also, in the dimensions of the grave, the form of the master's square, the 3 feet, the four cardinal points, and the 5 feet or more perpendicular, and the resultant of these three, when conjoined, is a right-angled triangle, the triangle of Pythagoras? How often do we miss such an important detail of our ritual when, in the perambulations of the third degree, the deacons and the candidate pause at each corner of the lodge? In almost every case, they pause after turning the corner, mainly with the idea of starting off again in step, but the pause should be with the candidate in the corner, example, before turning. The deacons and the candidate form a right-angled triangle, with the candidate as the right angle, and the pause is symbolical representation of applying that right angle to each corner of the lodge in turn, the lodge symbolically being the candidate's personal life. Notice also that the lodge is squared 4 times during each perambulation, and therefore 12 times in all, being symbolical of testing the candidate in each of the 12 houses of the zodiac. In other words, he must prove that he is in harmony with each part of the material universe before he is considered a fit person to be subjected to that last and greatest trial by which means alone he can participate in the higher mysteries. No person who is out of harmony with lower things can hope to attain mastery over higher things, and it is essential that the candidate should pass before the brethren, not the brethren who are seated on chairs round the lodge room, but those of the Grand Lodge above, before whom we must prove ourselves if we wish to be admitted to those secrets which throughout the ages have been incommunicable. The elements. One of the early objects of initiation, therefore, is to learn how to control the elements of life. The traditional expression is that one must learn to control the elements and the elementals. The elements we know as earth, water, air, and fire, and the elementals are the nature spirits or genii or fairies connected with those elements. They represent particular part aspects of the human soul. In the Western world, they are the gnomes of the element earth, the nymphs or undines of the element water, the sylphs of the element of air, and the salamanders of the element fire. The names are known from the fairy tales of our childhood, many of which reveal psychological hints of great significance. In modern analytical psychology, the four elements are revived as perception, feeling, thinking, and intuition, or as intuition, emotion, reason, and action, terms which we have met in our study of the zodiac. The traditional colors of the four elements are woven into the veil of the temple, where they are white linen from the flax of earth, purple of the sea from the Tyrian purple obtained from a species of shellfish, blue of the air assimilated to the air when dark, or the blue vault of heaven, and the scarlet of fire. There is important symbolism in the colors of the robes of the candidates and the principals in our chapter ceremonies. We have seen that the sign of Leo and the sun is the crown of the east, and this is the sign of fire. Just as the lion is called the king of beasts, so can the sign of Leo be considered as the royal sign, the sign of the royal line of Judah, and the crown of our order. The purple of water is the appropriate color of the emotional plane, of the astral, which is free from the bonds of earth and can reflect the future as well as the past, which can provide the gift of tongues as well as the gift of prophecy. The element of air is associated with the mind and the mental plane. It is the function of the priesthood to guide the mind toward the higher planes, and it is appropriate that the color of craft masonry should be blue, for it also seeks to guide the mind to the study of the hidden mysteries of nature and science. Traditionally, the element of fire was ascribed to the evangelist Saint Mark, the interpreter of Peter, the element of air and the eagle to Saint John the mystic, the element of water to Saint Matthew the tax gatherer, who apportions the wages in accordance with the astral records, and the element of earth to St. Luke, the physician who is called upon to heal the wounds of our earthly existence. In considering the symbolism of the four elements, it is important to remember that they should be correlated in accordance with two traditional systems. In the circular zodiac, as in medieval alchemy, the four elements were considered as pairs of opposites. Fire was opposed to water, since the latter quenches fire, and air was opposed to earth, since the former was light and tended to rise, whereas the latter was heavy and tended to fall. In this way, the two interlaced triangles, the Seal of Solomon, referred to the opposites of fire and water, that pointing upward represented fire and the masculine forces of nature, pointing downward represented water and the feminine forces of nature. The union of the two in perfect balance was a symbol of the mystical marriage, and the seventh point, often placed at the center of the interlaced triangles, had the same symbolism as the child of that marriage, the bud of the lotus, or of Tom Thumb, the power of the seventh chakra, the development of the superconsciousness, the attainment of the samadhi, the attainment of the golden crown. The triangle of fire represented spiritual aspiration, ascending like fire, ever upward, while the triangle of water represented spiritual grace, descending like the gentle dew from heaven upon the place beneath, upon the faithful and the obedient of the human race. The triangle of fire symbolizes justice, raised upward like the sword held in the right hand, the male side of the traditional figure of justice, and the triangle of water symbolizes mercy like the dew descending from heaven, represented by the balance held in the left hand, the female side of justice. The feminine aspect of the balance is further emphasized by the fact that it is fitted with two scale pans, two being the first female number. The cross. The traditional four elements of astrology are based on a slightly different arrangement, which appears to date from about the time of Aristotle, who considered that all matter was composed of varying proportions of one or more elements. He suggested that the characteristics of any particular body could be described in accordance with its content and proportion of two pairs of opposites, which he called hot and cold, dry and wet. His teaching was that all substances contain in various proportions the four elementary qualities of fixity, like solidity, earth, liquidity, water, fluidity, air, and radiation, fire. When these elementary characteristics were applied to astrology, the elements which support life, earth, and water, were ascribed to the fixed negative signs, the feminine, while those which activate life, fire, and air are ascribed to the fixed positive signs, the masculine. Thus, Leo fire and Taurus earth remain constant in both systems. But the signs of Aquarius and Scorpio could represent either air or water, depending on the system in use.
This duality of Aquarius and Scorpio is found throughout the literature of mysticism and astrology. It can lead to confusion unless one is sure which system is under consideration. In the circular zodiac, the sign of Aquarius, the water man, is the center of the quadrant of the sea, and that of Scorpio Aquila, the scorpion and the eagle, is the center of the quadrant of the air, the blue arc of heaven. On the other hand, in the symbolism of the fixed cross, the two positive signs of Leo and Aquarius represent fire and air respectively, while the two negative signs of Taurus and Scorpio, Aquila, represent earth and water respectively. As we have seen previously, the horizontal bar of the cross represents the feminine aspect of nature, earth and water, while the vertical bar represents the masculine aspect of spirit, fire and air. When the cross has its four arms of equal length, spirit and matter are in equal balance, and we can see this balance in the cruciform division of the four elements at the center of the circle of the zodiac. The Tao cross, which has the horizontal arm at the top of the vertical, is the symbol of spirit totally submerged in matter. This is the cross of suffering and of darkness, and it is that which is formed in space by the master of the lodge when the candidate of the first degree is to be restored to light. The Tao cross should be traced by the master's gavel, but the sign is not always given correctly. The inverted Tao cross, what we call the master's level, is the symbol of spirit in contact with but above matter, and this is the quote-unquote mark or sign of life, of which the angel said, quote, "Go through the midst of the city, through the midst of Jerusalem, and set a mark upon the foreheads of the men that sigh, and that cry for all the abominations that be done in the midst thereof. For these reasons it has ever been considered a mark or sign of life," end quote. The horizontal bar of the cross is that connecting the two feminine signs of Taurus and Scorpio, or, according to our astrological symbolism, that connecting the elements earth and water, the two elements which support life. In Eastern symbolism, these frequently were described as the dragon's head and the dragon's tail, respectively, and the symbol of St. George slaying the dragon is another reference to the lance, the vertical bar of the cross, of spirit overcoming, or slaying, the horizontal axis, the dragon of matter. The vertical axis, that of spirit, is represented by many forms of symbolism. It is found in various forms of sacred poles and pillars, and the steeples of churches, and the minarets of mosques, in the Masonic pillar of Jakin, and in the wand as representing a power from above. This wand is the wand of the magician, the baton of the conductor of an orchestra, and the magic wand of Mercury, Hermes, the god of air, the messenger of the gods, the wanderer between the spheres, the lord of the function, of inspiration, and intuition. We use the same symbol in the wands of the deacons, the messengers of our lodges, whose sign of office originally was the caduceus of Mercury or Hermes. When this symbolic wand touches a person, his world is transformed into a more joyful realm, and he becomes charged with the power of the spirit. Perhaps, at the same time, he sees his old world in a new light for the first time in its true light, and then commences the fight for mastery between the dragon of materialism and the angel of light, in whose hand is the lance of the spirit. The two axes of the cross are present also in our lodges, as the two columns of the wardens, and it is for this reason that the one is erect, while the other is laid horizontally. When the lodge is at labor, the column of the senior warden is erect to indicate that the power of the spirit is flowing due east and west, and that the lodge is oriented in the axis. When the lodge is called from labor to refreshment, the spiritual axis is horizontal, signifying lying down to rest, and the lodge then becomes oriented along the axis of earth and water, the bread and water of our material sustenance. But brethren, man cannot live by bread and water alone, and those who look on the Masonic banquets as more important than the Masonic ceremonies are living according to the laws of the dragon. It is a matter of passing interest that the sign of Taurus, the bull, and also the position of the junior warden are in the south, the location of the sun at high noon for the northern hemisphere, while the dragon usually is represented with flames issuing from its mouth. The sign of Taurus is represented only by the head of the bull, corresponding to the head of the dragon, while the opposite sign, corresponding to the tail of the dragon, is represented by the scorpion, having the sting in its tail. We have seen that the vertical axis of the spirit is assigned to the two elements of fire and air, and that the colors associated with these elements, respectively, are scarlet and blue. These are the colors of the robes of the king and the priest, and the colors of the ribbon worn by the companions, a sacred emblem denoting light being composed of two of the principal colors with which the veils of the temple and tabernacle were interwoven. It has ever been considered an emblem of regal dignity and power. It is thus a symbol of the spiritual axis of Leo, the royal sign, and Aquarius, the water man, the power of the human mind. If we care to ascribe to the two axes their astrological symbols, the vertical represents the opposite poles of intuition and reason, while the horizontal axis represents the opposite poles of emotion and action. Alternatively, they represent intuition and thinking, the mind, and feeling and willing. In each case, the lowest element action and will is that of earth, while the highest intuition is that of fire. The reference to our four rivers which watered the Garden of Eden also is connected with the symbolism of the four elements. These mystical rivers were named Pison, fire, meaning joined together as one, Hiddekel, air, meaning freely flowing, Gion, water, meaning to run out, to burst forth into thought, and Phraith, or the Euphrates, earth, meaning to increase the creative power, the fruitful river. All these four rivers were said to issue from the river Nahar, meaning the one river, the spirit. The word Nahar refers to breathing deeply, so that this one river is connected with what we otherwise call the breath of life. And the mystical fire of the east, the river Pison, refers to the union with the fire, the transmutation into gold, the attainment of the crown of the east. Alternatively, the action of the fire of the spirit, the red color, acting on the axis of earth and water, bread and water, converts them into the mystical bread and wine of the sacrament, the transmuting effect of the Holy Grail. But, just as we know that the contact of two poles of an electric battery produces current, or even a spark, so does the entry of a spirit into matter bring about a change resulting from the spark of that light which, at our initiation, we proclaimed to be the predominant wish of our hearts. Just as the passage of a current of electricity through an electrolyte produces a permanent change, so the effect of that light, which is from above, will have a permanent effect on the candidate, and he can never revert to his original state of darkness. It is often said, quote, "Once a Mason, always a Mason," end quote. And having experienced the power of that light, it would be spiritual death for the candidate to attempt to retreat. For then the running noose of our astral cord, the cable tow of the Freemason, would lead to strangulation of the mind. Ignorance is one of the deadly evils, but knowledge wrongly applied leads to spiritual destruction. It is fully in accord with this teaching that the sharp instrument placed to the breast of the candidate should be of cruciform shape and in the form of man himself. The Three Pillars. A study of the signs in the circle of the zodiac shows that they are in the form of three crosses which we call the fixed crosses, the cardinal cross and the mutable cross, and it is useful to separate these, placing the appropriate planetary signs at the end of each axis in place of the zodiacal signs. We find that the fixed and the cardinal crosses are mirror images of each other, except that the fixed cross has the sun at its eastern arm, while the cardinal cross has the moon in the corresponding position. Since the moon only shines by reflection of the light of the sun, the one truly is a mirror image of the other. The planets included in these two crosses are the sun, the moon, Venus, Mars, and Saturn. The mutable cross consists of two planets only, Mercury and Jupiter. According to occult teaching, the planet Mercury represents, quote-unquote, mind or variety of mental experience, while Jupiter represents single-pointed mind or law and order. This cross is bipolar in that it forms a link between the positive and the negative signs. And, as you will see, it is in the form of a St. Andrew's cross. According to Dionysian symbolism, man, as the microcosm, is represented as stretched out on the diagonals of a square on a St. Andrew's cross, and this square is composed of 21 smaller squares along each side, making 441 squares in all, equal to 9. The square is inscribed in a circle, which in turn is inscribed in a larger square having 30 component squares along each edge, making 900 in all. 9 is the number of the perfect man, and this symbol gives a subtle relationship between the 1 plus 2 equals 3, and according to our analysis of the zodiac, the figure of man as the microcosm would have the sign of the planet Mercury at the tip of each hand, and that of Jupiter at the tip of each foot. Can we not say that this man represents mind incarcerated in matter, with the feet of the figure based on law and order, while the hands reach outward and ever upward for further variety of mental experience? The corresponding zodiacal signs which form this mutable cross and therefore the figure of man as the microcosm are Gemini, Virgo, Sagittarius, and Pisces, and to these, traditionally, are ascribed the virtues of understanding, modesty, generosity, and sympathy, or charity. We have ample reference to them in our ritual, yet ought no eminence of situation make us forget that we are brothers, for he who is placed on the lowest spoke of fortune's wheel, or our circle of the zodiacal, is equally entitled to our regard. Again, humility in each is an essential qualification. Again, that virtue which may justly be deemed the distinguishing characteristic of a Freemason's heart, I mean charity. And finally, to drop a tear of sympathy over the failings of a brother. Our peculiar system of morality truly is veiled, and all that we can do is to raise the tip of the veil and then retire with all respect and reverence. Do we not find in our cardinal and fixed crosses a symbol of that double cube which was covered by a veil? It is said to represent heaven and earth, or, again, the rough and perfect ashlars of our early symbolism. The cardinal signs remind us of the inflowing power, and the fixed signs of our capacity for receiving what we call flashes of inspiration, be they rushing mighty winds or still small voices. Just as the hammer of the smith does not produce sparks until it strikes the resistance of an anvil or of the rough lump of metal on that anvil, so the powers of the spirit do not manifest until they meet the resistance of our imperfect beings. The cardinal and the fixed crosses therefore represent the opposite poles of the great cosmic force which, like great magnets, hold matter in perfect equilibrium. But the human being, whose mental powers are crucified on the third cross, that of incarnate humanity, the bipolar or mutable cross is equipped with the capacity to interpret the signs and symbols of the other two, although so very often he regards them only as figures of wood and stone. We can consider the three crosses in another way. The cardinal cross is governed by the moon, the symbol of Isis, and the feminine or institutional aspect of human nature. The fixed cross is governed by the sun, the symbol of Osiris and of the masculine, the strength and the reasoning aspect of our nature. We know that the cardinal cross corresponds to the four cardinal virtues, which collectively may be called wisdom, so that with the strength of the fixed cross, we have two of the three great pillars, which are said to support a Mason's lodge: wisdom, strength, and beauty. In the fourth section of this lecture, we are told that they represent wisdom to contrive, strength to support, and beauty to adorn, wisdom to conduct us in all our undertakings, strength to support us in all our difficulties, and beauty to adorn the inward man. Further, we are told, quote, "The universe is the temple of that deity whom we serve. Wisdom, strength, and beauty are about his throne as pillars of his works. His wisdom is infinite, his strength omnipotent, his beauty shines forth throughout the whole of creation in symmetry and order. The heavens he has stretched forth as a canopy, the outstretched arms of the man on the mutable cross. He has planted the earth as his footstool, the outstretched feet of the man on the mutable cross. He has crowned his temple with stars as with a diadem, and his hands extend their power and glory. The sun and the moon are messengers of his divine will, and all his laws are concord. The three great pillars which support a Mason's lodge are emblems of these divine attributes." End quote. These are the pillars which, in the lodge, are represented respectively by the Doric of the senior warden, and the Ionic of the worshipful master, and the Corinthian of the junior warden, thus allocating the cardinal cross of the moon to the senior warden, who is situated in the place of the setting sun, and to whom is allocated the celestial lodge. The fixed cross of strength, therefore, is allocated to the worshipful master, who rules by virtue of the power in him vested, and the mutable cross of beauty is allocated to the junior warden, who represents the personal human being, the man, as the microcosm. Since the universe is always considered to be feminine with respect to God, the Great Mother, Mother Nature, the Widow, the Virgin Mother, we are guided to a contemplation of the triplicity of the universe, God and man, or man as the offspring from the mystical marriage of God and the universe, in that man as the son of the widow, whereby we are all brothers to Hiram Abiff, who was a widow's son. As we have seen previously, he was the great exemplar of our order, and therefore represents the ideal man. And I hope that this will make a lasting impression on his and your minds, should you ever be placed in a similar state of trial. We place two of the great pillars at opposite ends of our lodge, the strength of the sun, Ionic pillar, beside the worshipful master, and the wisdom of Isis, the Doric pillar, beside the senior warden, the two pillars being located due east and west. Notice also that the Doric architecture originated in Egypt, and that the word door means a dwelling. Also, the first letter, the delta, or the daleth, has the numerical value of 4, and that, in Hebrew, the symbolic meaning of the daleth is the breast and every nourishing and abundant object. The symbolic meaning is the universal quaternary, the source of all physical existence. As we read in the volume of Sacred Law, Matthew 11:19, quote, "Wisdom is justified of her children," end quote. The beautiful Corinthian pillar is placed beside the junior warden as the outside steward of the lodge of humanity, and the interior lodge of every individual human being, the beauty of the inward man. Inside each one of us, there is the white altar of incense, the altar of purity, and it is within the potential of everyone to allow that purity and that beauty to radiate as the body of light. Possibly, it is not surprising that the fixed points of the compasses should be associated with the fixed cross of the zodiac. You will remember that some authors have placed the letters ROTA, the wheel, at the four points of the cross, and have suggested this as a possible origin of the word tarot. According to the Greek numerical alphabet, the word rota has the value of 100 plus 70 plus 300 plus 1, which equals 471 equals 12. This is our circle of the zodiac. In our ritual, we refer to the quote-unquote brethren of the northeast, south, and west. We'll take notice that Mr. Blank is about to pass in view before them to show that blank, and a fit and proper person to be made a Mason. So, this being a longer paper, I wanted to actually break it into two parts, this week and, of course, next week. I hope you don't mind. You know, this is just because we have MasonicCon Chicago coming up, and I know not all of you are able to attend, and I know not all of you care about that, but it is something I do have to put together, and I just want to say thanks for your understanding in advance. And with that, thank once again the contributors, the fellows, the producers of the WCY podcast. If you want to know more about how to help this show out, head on over to WCYpodcast.com for all the details. Before we close out this week, I have a correction to make. Last week in episode number 462, I said that our brother Shishir Ratan said that he was from the Grand Lodge of Ireland, actually. Now, he's actually under the Grand Lodge of India, not Ireland. My mistake, my apologies, brother. but I wanted to make that correction ASAP. We'll be back again next week with the second half of this paper, actually the second or maybe the last third of the paper, I should say, and we'll also likely have, possibly, some additional content. So with that, thank you all so much. We'll talk to you all next week. Until then, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.